Blog Talk Radio.
Talk. Word itself. Four letters, I believe. Yeah. But carries so much weight. You know, we get together now and we always got together on Sundays, but lately we get together on Sunday mornings, and that ain't always easy. That's not always easy. And I say we, speaking of myself, Mark Elliott, Mr. Maurice, Mr. Charles, we put together When Black Men Talk. And I want to thank these gentlemen because they could be doing other things on a Sunday morning. Last year we talked about some things that Sunday mornings represent, but they find it themselves to make it here and be part of this conversation, provocative conversation, where we talk about life, love, and relationships, and basically kind of look in the mirror and give ourselves an honest self-evaluation and don't shy away from things that need to be said. We boldly say those things, so you kind of know that by now. But going back to the word talk, it's just genuine, because if you think about it, it's the foundation of this show, and it's the foundation of so many relationships, at least it should be. It's how we express ourselves, basically how we open up and allow people to feel what we're thinking or know what we're thinking or what we're feeling. So we're basically doing business. It evolves and it deals with so much with us on a personal and a daily basis. But at the same time, the phrase itself, you know, we need to talk, sometimes can be paralyzing. And I wanted to spend a little time at the opening and kind of going over that, because that's something most men that heard over the years, that we need to talk. Hear that and we kind of like say, okay, what's coming next? It's almost like you're being called up to the principal's office and you got to deal with something. And we kind of look at it in different ways, but I don't know if we kind of ever really kind of talked about it in detail on the show. When a woman says to you, we need to talk. Remember years ago when the show opened up, we used to have a song that came on basically talking about we're going to talk. And it's just kind of forcing the guy to open up and talk and express himself in so many ways. And she said in the song, you know, no matter what you say, even it hurts me, I need to hear it, I want you to talk. And I thought that was a great, at the time, I thought that was a great foundation for the show, because it was kind of setting the format, laying the foundation of what we're kind of basically doing that without her. So Mr. DeRees, I'm going to come to you first with this one, sir. And since I know at some point in your life you heard the phrase, we need to talk. And when you heard that phrase, what you think about it, how you feel about it, what you kind of felt was coming beyond it. But one thing I will say this before I come to you, sir, is that I always knew this when I heard that phrase. When they said to me, we need to talk or whatever about talking, what they were really saying is that I want to talk. If you take the word we out, because they weren't listening. They were just talking. But when you heard the phrase, my brother, we need to talk, what did you think, and how did that kind of play itself out with you? Good morning, by the way.
Good morning. You ever run into a big spider web, face first in a spider web? That's the feeling. you knew you were a big old spider getting caught up in the spider web. You ain't going to win. This is going to be, you're going to just take the loss, because she'd already prepared her argument. She ain't give you no time. You're in court. She ain't give you no time to prepare argument, prepare, you know, rebuttal, nothing. It's just, you know, a sneak attack that, you know, you're going to have to just listen. You're going to have to try to figure out, you know, what she knows, because women don't rarely ask you questions that they don't know the answer to. So, you know, you just got to brace for a loss, because you are unprepared for that conversation at that particular time.
Interesting you said about, you know, you're going to lose, because basically, again, it wasn't a conversation that was going to be a give and take. And I'll say it again, they just say, I want to talk, because it wasn't a conversation where you was going to be able to participate. Because even if you responded to what they're saying, they're not hearing it. Because like you said, they came pre-prepared, already thought this out, lost sleep, given this serious, deep thought, put all their arguments together. They're not necessarily realizing, even in an argument, it's give and take. You know, you just basically just don't throw your stuff out there and just whatever you believe, whatever you think, whatever your anger and your emotions brought you to makes it automatically correct. Mr. Charles, when you hear the phrase or you heard the phrase over the years, we need to talk, your reaction to it, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, the reaction is, first of all, in your mind, you think something's bothering her or she has some unresolved issues. You knew there was an issue, something that she couldn't figure out or she wanted to vent about. So as DeMarie said earlier, you just knew you had to be on the defensive. You were on trial. So you knew something was going on because it's not one of those things like, hey, we talk about what we're going to do for our trip or something like that. You knew you were in trouble. Those nice calls, that was not necessary to have that much extracurricular communication. So you knew there was an issue.
I'm going to, if you two want to do so, cool, but I'm going to throw out an example of when this happened to me a long time ago. So I laid a foundation down, and years ago, just as prior to, I was just about ready to get separated when I was married, met someone. So, you know, was talking and basically going back and forth to this place. The person had an idea, gave them some an idea, basically where I'm headed in my personal life, in a sense. I'm going to become separated, yada, yada, moving on. So I guess in the back of her head, or her mind, she thought, okay, this is a great opportunity to kind of seize the moment, to step in and strengthen what her and I could potentially may have and go in a different direction. So she offered me the opportunity to basically move in with her and, you know, in a good place of my own, move in with her and stay with her rent-free. Won't pay anything. You know, my money's my money. She takes care of everything. And so initially hearing this, I'm like, I ain't doing this. Do it right away. I'm not doing it. So I said, well, you know, let me give it some thought. Gave it some thought. Told her, no, I'm not going to do this, and this is why I'm not going to do this. Now, at the time, I knew it wasn't kind of received well, but that's that. A couple of nights later, we need to talk. So basically, that talk was on, you know, why I'm not coming there again. And even that conversation, everything I said 2 days before was already, I could have just said the same things over again. So that conversation or that idea, we need to talk. No, you needed to talk because you just thought in your mind, you gave me something so great. How do I turn it down? How do I not basically move in and just be a sucker to you and allow you to take all that, not realizing that I'm surrendering my privacy. I'm surrendering my life. You know, basically I'm coming from one frying pan and jumping in your frying pan. So that was the foundation of the talk. That's her talk. Because if you really wanted to talk about it, you could have took my response, and we could have went through it and tried to understand it. So there again, when they say we need to talk, when they put together their arguments, it's not about, it's about them being hurt. It's about them feeling a certain way that they may not have gotten their way, things ain't come the way they want it, and they're pissed off. But to me, if you're going to be with someone, stop trying to program them to play the role you want them to play and respect them for who they are. Now, if you have an example of that or something similar to that, Mr. DeMarie, and you want to share it, my brother, here's your opportunity.
Man, this is crazy because it was the same situation. You and I probably divorced like right after each other, and I was in the same situation. But what I did was the person offered a place to stay, things of that sort. So I did, and I insisted on paying rent. I insisted because I knew that, you know, ain't nothing free. And so The person that I was staying with was, I think she thought she was on audition to be the next one in line to, you know, come on down, the price is right, you know. But she was telling me that, you know, I got some friends, you know, that, you know, in the real estate, you know, find me a new place. And then, you know, each week I was asking, you know, nothing was moving. So I just went on and did it myself. And they looked shocked. And I'm like, okay, I'm moving out on this date. I'm packing up. And, you know, thank you for, you know, the hospitality. And so, yeah, they're getting their feelings about, you know, the conversation. This is what I thought, you know, the conversation we had, you know, when I announced I was moving. This is what I thought was going to happen, such and such and such. I'm like, no, you didn't think that because I already told you what my intentions were. My intentions were not to, you know, build on, you know, start another relationship. I'm just coming out of this relationship. Why would I start another relationship? And so you're right. It's about what they want, what they envision. Forget what you said because what you say doesn't matter. And so when just certain women, I'm not going to say all women, certain women, when they get in their head that, you know, there's something that they want, it doesn't matter what you're coming with at the conversation. If it's not in line with what they want and how they see things, they can't hear it. They don't want to hear it. They refuse to hear it. And it gets to a point where they, once you kind of just stand on what you want, they feel like you did them wrong. Like, no, I told you the truth. You just didn't accept the truth. So you can be all in your feelings if you want, but I told you my intention. And it kind of, I know for me, it kind of pisses me off because it's like we're having these talks, but you're not listening. It's just one-sided. So if you want to talk, let's talk. But if you just want to tell me what you think, then, you know, let it be that. Say that.
Woo! Man, you know, it's amazing. I'm in Connecticut, you're in Chicago, and we can damn near experience the same different things at different places.
Same thing, yeah.
Think about that for a second.
I think grandma up in heaven playing tricks, man. I think grandma playing tricks.
Bro.
I think grandma in heaven playing tricks. I truly do, man.
She might be nudging God saying, go do this. Do that if you don't mind, you know, sprinkle that on them a little bit.
Let's see what they do.
Mr. Charles, man, if you got an example that you want to share, please do, my brother.
Yeah, well, since I'm not on that same level as you gentlemen jumping across the broom, it's a little different for the single guys out here. So for me, it was always more or less about individuals thinking that if you came out of a relationship or because you were by yourself, that you were this individual that needed nurturing and caring for. So it's like, well, you just need somebody. I used to hear this line all the time. I think you need somebody to take care of you. All right.
I think we lost Mr. Charles. He had to pop back in. It's interesting how he said that, how you need somebody to take care of you, because it's kind of interesting is that, you know, it's funny you would think, Mr. DeMaurice, when a woman comes across a man that she doesn't have to kind of take care of, she would relinquish in that fact and enjoy it, but in a way they want to, we're not saying all, but they want to some, step in because and feel that way and fill that void, because even if they don't feel the need to do it, it's a sense that they're trying to earn you in a sense back to where if I could step in and take care of you. What I'm saying, Mr. Charles, just kind of piggyback on what you're saying, in some cases where they say, you know, you need XYZ, is they're trying to show you that you need me in your life. You may not want me in your life, but I'm going to kind of show you. Not kind. Take the word kinda out. I'm going to kind of show you that you need me in your life. You just don't know it yet. And it's a way of them kind of placing themselves in your life, like basically taking a move and taking position and taking status in your life because you need this. You're just not smart enough. You're dumb to the fact. You don't realize it, but you kind of need me in your life. So I kind of took that. I was going to give it the question to Mr. Jarish, but since you're back, man, please continue on what you're saying, sir.
Yeah. Sorry about the interruption. But part of it is when you hear, when I heard that statement, it's like, okay, if you know who I am and what I've been through and what I've experienced, to say I need you, you might be a great asset to what I was trying to do and help me, you know, perhaps my movement in life, you know, as a great helpmate, whatever. But to say I need you, you really don't know me. You didn't know, you didn't pay attention to my experience, or you didn't get to know me, because if you understand that the independence and the things I had to do growing up as a kid, I mean, I really don't need, at that point, I really didn't need anybody. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying, when you say need, it's like a person can't move forward without in life without you. But you, my thing was, they should think, they don't know me. But I understood it, because we all say we need mates and we need people that can connect with us, and we should never, you know, we don't want to be alone, and we shouldn't be alone, because it wasn't meant that way. But, yeah, when I would hear that, I'm like, wow. And then if you didn't, it was like, it was almost as if, as you said, they were looking at me like, if you just don't know. If you had me, your life could change, or you could be so much different as a man and all this other stuff. And I'm like, it's almost as if I was blowing a chance to be great if I had them by my side. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. But, again, you don't know me. You don't know me. I would appreciate it, and I thank you, but you don't know me. So, yeah, that's how it was for me. And the other things, too, were if I was in a relationship or something like that, too, because I was single, you had others that were, like, trying to present it as if they had a better package. I don't know if they would have done that if I was married. It was like, well, are you messing with her? You know you already messing around there when you – I know you got somebody else like that song, the SOS song, when it said, you know, just the way you like it. And it's like, well, why are you doing this? I can do this better for you. I'm in a better situation. But you over here messing with this, and you can have this. And I'm like, okay. So, yeah, that's when it made things a little bit more interesting for myself. But I always go, well, you can move in with me. Like you said, you don't have to pay for anything. And I got you, and we're going to build together. And I'm like, yeah, but the note I'm signing, the debt I'm going to owe you is going to be second to none. I will never be able to repay that debt.
That's deep right there, my brother. That is super deep. Demon Reese, I do want to give you a chance to comment on what I was saying a little while ago, is that in a sense, they kind of treat you that you're not smart enough to realize that, you know, if I come into your life, they're trying to place themselves in there and saying, you need X, Y, Z, you need me for this and that, because they're trying to kind of put themselves in your life, in a sense, have you look at them in a way to where your life will be better suited. And if you buy into it and you believe it, you'll always have me in your life, because you can't do without me. Your response, sir.
Well, it's just almost like they give up the game plan of the takeover. Like, you're not doing it good enough, or, you know, you're not smart enough, or what you're doing is not really working. So I'm going to come in here and take over and give you what you should have, or what I think you should have, or what I think you need. And it's kind of, to me, an insult that you know, you've been traveling along and you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. Your life has been nothing up to this point until you met them. So that's the way I look at it, as an insult. So if you want to add on to me, you know, let's add on to it and make this greater. But don't tell me what I've been doing in so many words. This ain't working for you, and I can come in and do this, and then boom, you know, I have this fantastic life. You know, you got to prove that. You just can't say that. And it's almost as if it's, hey, I don't really have anything going right now, and this person got this going on, so let me convince them that I got it going on so I can, you know, get in what this person is doing and good in their lives. And so I always look at it as an insult that, you know, instead of saying, I like what you're doing, I want to be a part of it, I'm just going to come over and take over because you need me to get over this hump. And I always looked at that as an insult. I can't live without you. You know, you can compliment me, but you're not going to take over.
I stated in last show, we had a question. Thanks, Mr. Strauss. I can't think of a question. I know Mr. Strauss put a question out. And I stated about until we really get serious and open up and be ourselves and stop with the game plan, relationships are never going to be what they're supposed to be. They just aren't. And that's game planning. Playing, I should say, and planning. Because to make a person feel they must have you, that you're going to bring something and add something of so much substance to their life that they must cling on to you, it's a game. And the funny thing about to me, about women, they think game playing only leads to basically a man playing around trying to have sex with you or trying to have sex with many other women of the case. And to me, they're called that the player. But a woman plays games on many different levels. And they don't, 9 out of 10 times, let me say 5 out of 10 times, they don't get called out on it. And just because a man don't call you out on it, that don't mean we don't see your game and we don't see the game you're trying to play. But what we have realized over time and over the years, we're not going to play with you, but it's too much energy to always be calling you out on your games. And even when we call you out on it, you're not going to take accountability for it. You're going to basically try to hide it, deny it, and come back in another form of fashion. But don't come to me realistically and act like you're trying to have a serious relationship and you're playing games, because you're not. You're a young girl trying to act and impersonating a grown woman. And that's what I see a lot. A bunch of grown women basically impersonating a grown woman, but they're playing childish school games. And that's what that is. So when you're ready to open your heart and ready to love freely and be the woman that you are and be transparent, then maybe our hearts can connect and we can grow in love. But when you're trying to manufacture, when you're trying to basically move this pedal and move this over here and move that and do all that, where's love in that? It's not going to grow. And then when it doesn't happen, you sit back and evaluate and look at everything that he did wrong. But you don't see the games you brought to the table. You didn't put the Parker, Milton and Parker away and stop playing the games to try to maneuver, get things going. Because realistically, you know why you didn't do that? You don't trust in who you are as a woman that you can have him without playing the games. Your response, if you have a response to that, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, no doubt. I think the issue there, as you mentioned, is where's a man? What is a man thinking when he sees that? And you mentioned that before. Sometimes we don't have energy, or we don't want to deal with it at that time, or we just let them keep moving forward. But what I always found interesting was, as I mentioned before, that when you enter this, you try to, or I used to try to get along to make it work, to kind of see how things were going, because I really liked the person. I thought they would be it'd be kind of intriguing to see where we could go. But I wanted to get past that representative stage, and I don't want to mess this up. And the point of it came to where you go, all right, I'll give a little leeway here and there. But then again, I think that's why I shortchanged myself. Because as you mentioned before, instead of playing games, you just got to be yourself and come into it that way. I think sometimes I would often shortchange myself because maybe I thought the person initially was out of my league. And what I mean by that, it could even be from a physical standpoint, but that's part of being young. But when you know who you are and you're a mature individual and you're comfortable with who you are, then those things like that often won't go and shouldn't go into your head because it's going to be what it is, the relationship that is, and then you just have to basically live on your own accord. You have to stand on your own merit. And once I learned that, then it changed the way that I went about talking to people and understanding how things work and who I was. But it was easy to fall into that because in the end, once I figured it all out, I was like, well, I thought this was super special and she had all these magic powers, like she was going to make everything better because she is this person. And then when I found out who it was, I was like, I could have just been me. from the start, and that would have been okay. So I've evolved into doing that and moving forward in that situation when I even have discussions or even I consider any relationships. Instead of trying to perpetrate the fraud and being a representative, I'm going to just be me.
Mr. DeMaurice, you know, I know I haven't had to say a lot, but if you something about it resonated with you in a sense or a fashion or something you want to add to it, feel free.
I mean, I think both of you hit it on the head, man. You know, it's, you know, I think I was telling Mr. Charles the other day, you know, we were talking about relationships and we always check on each other. I don't know why. We always check on each other, see, you know, where we are and as men, who we're dating and all that other stuff and been going. And I was telling them that, you know, at this particular time, I just don't have the desire to date or be in a relationship because, you know, all the game playing and all the, you know, you see through the strategy and all the things that, you know, that come with it. And it's like, at this point, I don't want to deal with that. And it gotten to a point where, and I'm not the only one. I just meet a lot of guys, you know, a lot of eligible men out there. Like, you know what? Nah, I'd rather just, you know, I'd rather be single and happy, you know, instead of, you know, going in a relationship knowing I gotta play these games. And so until something is really true blue, I'm not moving. I'm not moving off that. It's like sifting through a junkyard, man. And I don't want to do that anymore. So I've seen all the games. I've seen all the, you know, all the strategies. I see them play out. I can see it through a conversation, how it's going to happen. And until I see something new, it's like I'm not budging off that. And I'm good. I'm good with that because it's a waste of time to play games. At this particular point or with mature adults, it's a waste of time. And I don't know if I'm just farther along in this journey where my maturity level has gotten to a point where I don't play with childish things anymore. And it's sad, but that's, you know, what you said about women who impersonate being, you know, mature and, oh, I can handle this, or I'm different. The worst thing a woman can say is that, oh, I'm not like the others. I'm different, because you know that that's not true. She's saying that to get in. Or she tries to act a little different. But you have certain, I know I do, I have certain ways to get through all the BS to know that you're just the same, you're just another prototype of the same thing that's coming off the assembly line. And I don't know where they're learning this. I don't know where they're getting it from. I don't know if they're watching a TV show or got a book and they're going through, I mean, doing the same thing over and over again. But it's insanity, man. It's insanity to sit there and watch them kind of just do the same thing over again, like you ain't never seen it before or you have never heard it before. And then they're shocked when you put it out there that, you know, this is not what I want to do because it's the game and I'm not in the game plan. I'm not in the drama. And so they'll nod their head, yeah, I'm not into that either. But you're doing the same thing. So I don't know where they're getting it from. I really don't. But it's a sad commentary on, you know, in relationships and dating and women. And it doesn't matter whether they're older or younger. It's like the same pattern. And, you know, you try to help out, like, this is not going to work for you. But they run into the same pattern. And then they wonder why things aren't working out the way they think it should work out.
Yeah. I'm going to say something because you two are hitting on a lot of good things there, man, a lot of good things. And you say you wonder where they get it from. A lot of it was kind of taught to them, in a sense, by their elders, could be the mothers, the aunties, their cousins, whatever the case may be. In reality, they don't see you as a human being. They see you as something to basically get, to have, to manipulate, to get what they need. In a sense, they see you as a wallet. Because if you listen to a lot of them talk, what they say you represent and what they want, someone I could do this with, he's going to do that. They never speak of you, when I say you men in general, as an emotional being, someone that needs to be cared for, someone that needs to, that wants affection, someone wants to be told, you know, things that warms their heart, that makes them feel good about themselves. They never speak on that. It never could be a big, huge word, but very seldom, if ever, that's the way they view you when they first meet you. And I'm not saying men don't meet women and think about sex, but that's not the conversation here. So don't come back with me. We're somewhere. We're going to stay where we are. So they don't view you as having those things. So they view it, I can get this from you. And the game plan comes out of, let me do this, because if I could do this. And sometimes they're more attracted to the game than they are to you. You just become the pawn. Because they want to prove to themselves that their wiles are so good, they're so sharp, that they can have it. And then you sit back, and it's funny how you said, Mr. Reese, you have plenty of men, eligible men, that are happy and being single and alone. And then you go back and you look at, Mr. Charles asked us a few weeks ago, how do we get people together in the couples? Because there you have it right there. Men aren't willing anymore to just to be with you because you got tits and ass. We just aren't. Those are beautiful things, you know, they're great. But we want more than that. And some of us over the years will play the game along just to get that, and then we went about our way. It is what it is. But when you want a relationship, it's more than just tits and ass. You don't want the game plan. You don't want that. And if you got to the point in your life where you realize that's all they're basically bringing, and you have your peace of mind without it, yes, you're going to be single and be by yourself. And be happy to be. Walk around with your chest poked out. Mm-mm. And it's interesting where you see the numbers where marriage is not happening in the later stage. And it's even not starting now to happen in the earlier stage. And I say part of the reason why, because younger cats have realized they don't want that either. They don't want it. See, we came up with the mindset, you know, you're supposed to go find someone and make her your wife and do X, Y, Z, and you live a prosperous life. But we've realized that hasn't led us to prosperity. It hasn't. It's led us to a damn headache, in a sense. It led us to basically spending our money on stuff we don't want to spend it on. We realize that. So we're saying, you know what? Why am I going to get in that basically, that batter that's going to leave me here when I can stay outside that batter and I'm just happy? I wake up in the morning, I'm stress-free, I have a smile on my face, I look at the world totally different. Guess what? When I go to the doctors, they're telling me things are good. Come on. Why am I going to take something and put in the middle of that and change that? So if you can't basically assist that and complement that, what do I need you for? What are you bringing that's going to help or to elevate? If you're just going to bring the stuff that's in the batter, and the thing about the game plan too, it hasn't worked their entire life. It hasn't. The games they're playing hasn't worked. But they're not smart enough to go, you know what, let me stop. Because it's going to work at some point. It's like playing a lotto. You could be playing a lotto for 30 years, and you can keep playing. You haven't won in 30 years. You're going to think, at some point, I'll hit. That's kind of like the mentality. I guess, like, I heard a phrase for the lotto around here. You can't win unless you play. And that's what I guess they believe. If you keep playing, you're going to win. But you haven't won. When do you stop and evaluate and realize the games you're playing do not get you where you need to be? It just doesn't. And it's interesting because you think about what's on television, the fantasies, the what's out there, the reality shows, all that drama. And why do people find that so appealing? Why are they so attracted to it like a butterfly to a flame? Why do they run to it? Because in a sense, they don't feel like they're living a good life unless they have that. And I'm going to throw this question to you, Mr. Charles, because Mr. Dean Maurice touched on this a little while ago about honesty. It almost seems like that's not what they want. They don't want honesty. Honesty is not a value trait. It's not. Because I tell you what about honesty. It's not sexy. It's not drama-filled. It's not, so it's almost like they prefer you lie to them and play a game along with them. Because it gets their juices flowing. It gets them excited. It gets them involved. Maybe I'm off on a different stratosphere of saying that, Mr. Charles, but if I am, let me know. If I'm not, give me your reaction.
No, honesty is often, I think, something that is feared. And I say that because of the factor that if a person's honest and they are the real deal and they bring out some very strong qualities, then it forces the individual that's not looking for honesty to really reflect and look at themselves, where their shortcomings may be. Then therefore it's like, wow, what do I do next and how do I handle this situation? Sometimes maybe this person's probably too strong for me and maybe I'm not ready. So they have to take a look inside. And oftentimes that's not what some women want from a guy. They don't want the truth because the truth hurts and the truth forces you to look at yourself. And the question is, wow, am I strong enough to deal with this guy? Because, man, he knows what he wants and he's on point. Everything I said I want, or I think I said I want, but now it's right in front of my face. And how do I handle that?
Honestly, Mr. DeMaurice, you know, it's funny, the things they cry out and ask for, they don't really want. Someone that can communicate. You don't want that. You want someone that just going to shut their mouth, just basically going on with your game. You want honesty, nigga, don't. Honestly, Mr. Reese, how is it valued?
I think Mr. Charles said it. It's not valued because the truth hurts sometimes. You know, truth could be a balm, but the truth can hurt sometimes. And folks don't want to be hurting out here. So they'd rather you lie to them. They'd rather you, you know, play the game and you know, escape the hurt part of it. But that's pretty much life. You're going to get hurt sometimes. The truth is going to be good for you sometimes, and other times it's just going to sting. And folks want to feel good. It's all about feel good. Social media, putting up a picture, make me feel good, like my picture, like this, do this, do this. It's all about feeling good. And sometimes the truth does not feel good. Even though it's better for you, it does not feel good. So people would avoid that at all costs. So, you know, it's all a facade. This whole thing of, you know, I don't even like women who wear too much makeup because, you know, some women are beautiful. Some women are great artists. It's a lie. It's a lie. You know, I don't want to be surprised and wake up the next morning and somebody totally different than what I thought I saw the night before. You know, so it's this big lie to try to make you think of a person in a certain light, in a certain way. And honestly, there's no room for that anymore sometimes because I don't want to hurt. I don't want to feel bad. So I just want to feel good all the time. And it's impossible to feel good all the time.
It's funny you say about the makeup, man, because I was watching this video yesterday, and it was this couple. They're married, and it was talking about their lives and how things changed. So the first video I watched, it kind of just kind of rolled up, and I said, I'll look at it. And the wife was in the driver's seat. She had glasses on, was made up. And she's talking, and they're basically talking about how, as a married couple, they decided to sleep in separate beds and how it works out well for them. And they kind of went into detail. And some of it made sense. I'm not going to knock that. Due to how things work out. And they said they have a 2-year-old that's tough to sleep at night. So they found, you know, one couple will take one night to sleep and, you know, get a good night's sleep. And they kind of rotate. And that's cool. But the point of the makeup was she's sitting in a driver's seat. And she had glasses on. Very attractive woman. Had the makeup on. And I'm looking. And, okay. So after the playing that video for a while, let me go see what else they may have, you know, that might be interesting just to kind of view and peek. So I go look at some other videos, and I'm looking at the woman, and two of them, the next few videos, she's not made up. I'm like, is that the same woman? I'm like, is that really the same? I'm looking. I'm going, okay, she's holding a little girl, but she ain't look the same. I'm not saying she went from attractive to ugly, but she didn't look like the same woman. And that's amazing when you think about it. It's funny because I'm going to flip this and pivot this to this. You got women now running around injecting their bodies, make their breasts, but their breasts are not natural. You got them sticking shit in their ass where their ass ain't natural. And what I find real comical about this, real comical, with all that they said and did, they said that's what a man wants. You ever notice when anything they choose to do, they'll find a way to push it back on you? Because you said something, Mr. You and I was talking about a month ago. And I don't know, I don't know what brought you to say this. You told me about an old movie that Jack Nicholson played in. And you said that, I guess someone asked him something about a woman. This movie was made, what, 30-some years ago, if I remember correct? And what he said is that something about a woman with that, they don't take accountability. They just don't take accountability. And it's like, you said it, man. I literally almost fell to the floor. Because it's like they'd rather you put dirt on them while they're alive than take accountability. It's just, there's no accountability. So even with the them basically injecting themselves and all that, they'll turn around and act like it's being done. There's no accountability getting it done. The mad rush to do it is because that's what men want them to do. So I'm wondering, just thinking this out loud for those that are doing it. Do you mean to tell me you basically went to a guy and he said, you know what, I would have this for you waiting, only if you got a bigger ass. I mean, it's just, I find that so comical. But I want to come back to you, Mr. this one, because the word accountability, you know, think about that for a second, accountability. Wow. Because even in what we do here, the triangle that we do here of this show, we have a love of accountability to us that we carry in everything that we do. You know, every show we do or whatever we do, we carry a level of accountability that, you know, we care among us three. And it's kind of quiet in a sense where I feel my accountability, if I'm going to do this and have you two be part of this, I must make it worth something. I owe it to you two and owe it to the show to try to have this be something of substance, something of strength, just not to be flopping around because I don't want to waste your time. And the same thing when we do other shows, Mr. Charles and I'm sure we feel when we show up, we want to be able to bring something, to offer something, accountability where, hey, if you're having us there, we want to be able to be that. And it's not like you ask that of us. So accountability sometimes is kind of quiet, but it's strong at the same time. But if you're not accountable in a relationship for what goes on, if you can't stand up and be accountable, Mr. Maurice, what's going on?
Yeah, I think you're talking about the movie. I think it's As Good As It Gets. And Jack Nicholson is a writer who suffers from OCD. And a woman comes up to him. I guess he's at a restaurant. And he writes books about, you know, women characters. And she's like, how do you write women characters so well? And he says, I think of a man, and then I take away reason and accountability. And she just kind of looks at him like she's confused. But it was when he said that line, I was like, I don't know who wrote that. I got to look up who the writer on that in that screenplay. But that was exactly what it is. And she was saying that he wrote it so well. But, I mean, I think it's taught very early, being accountable. And as young men, we are made to be accountable for our actions. We have to do it, especially as black young men, as a way of survival. You have to be accountable for your actions. You got to be accountable for who you're around, all this other stuff. So we can't escape it. But somehow our counterparts are able to escape it in life where they don't have to be accountable for certain things. And I think it's about society, too, where, you know, where folks will be. I just saw a story on the Internet where there was a white female who was dating a black male, and she stabbed him to death. Now, he wasn't beating her or it wasn't a domestic violence situation. She stabbed him to death. The police put her in custody, and all she said to them was she had mental health issues. She wanted to, you know, end her life or something like that. They didn't put her in jail. They released her. Now they don't know where she is. They have no idea where this woman is. So she wasn't accountable for it. And so our society kind of sets that up for women sometimes, that you don't have to be accountable. All you have to do is this, and you can get out of it. But for men, nah, you got to be accountable. Matter of fact, I think we take a lot more accountable. We take their accountability in our lives. So they don't get their equal portion. We get it. So I think society's set up that way sometimes, where women aren't held accountable for their actions. And certain folks in society, you know, the privileged folks in society aren't held accountable. So if you got the right complexion, you got the right gender sometimes, you're not made to be accountable for anything. But for a black man, we got to be accountable for everything, or it's a life and death situation.
In the accountability comes honor as well. It does. When someone's able to basically step up and says, okay, I'm going to hold myself accountable for X, Y, Z, didn't happen. You look at that person and you honor them in a sense, and you respect them for the mere fact that their character allows them to do such. And this is a big thing here, Mr. Charles, with them not taking accountability. We see it as a character flaw. And you realize if you're in a situation, you know, you're in a situation and things happen where you're with this person, can you trust them to be accountable? And you know already you can't. You already know. Because you're not, even if you're just thinking them in the early stages, she's just a woman. In periods of time, as time goes on, as you two spend time together, she will show you she's not accountable. It could be small, it could be big. And she thinks it's cute when she doesn't take accountability. But in the same breath of not taking accountability, they tell you they want you to be your husband. You know, I want to get married. I want this, that, or this, whatever. And what they don't realize is that they done showed you you're not worthy of such. You're not. You can speak it with your mouth. But do I want to wake up in the morning next to someone that's not going to be accountable? Do I want to live the rest of my life overlooking the fact that you're not accountable? No. So do they miss that part, Mr. Charles, but about the accountability, to where when they choose not to step up to it, and we see it, and again, may not say nothing about it initially, but do they overlook the fact and sell themselves short by thinking it's cute? They've been told, don't take account. Mm-mm. It's not your fault. But they realize that could be preventing them from getting what they really want in the long run.
Yeah, no doubt. But I think that's part of it, too, is, as you mentioned early on, it may not seem like a big deal, but I think my issue with not having them being accountable is the fact of that there's going to come a time where it will matter, where if you're supposed to be in a relationship where you're connected with a person, you're both equally yoked or thinking you are, and you're going to need to depend on them. And it might be something really major or vital that you kind of say, hey, all right, we've agreed that you would handle this, and this is what we're doing, here's our plan, this is your part, I need you to do this. And then it comes down the pike, and then that's when that flaw comes out, if you will. You're not accountable, and you're like, well, you messed the whole dang old thing up. We had a plan. And then it goes into the bag as to, I don't know what you want from me. What do you expect me to do? That was too much pressure. But it's like, if I knew from the beginning, I should have trusted my instincts, knowing that you weren't capable or not going to do it, I would handle it myself, and we kept on as we've been doing. But I think that's a major point, where not being accountable, and then you try to put a person in a position that they neither want to do or are incapable of completing, causes a major problem.
Yeah. It's when I think about it, I listen to your reaction, you don't even hear that word anymore. In terms of man with woman, woman with man, we don't hear the word accountability anymore. We don't. And it's like, does it mean? Does it matter? It does. It means a lot. And it's funny because I've always said, you know, tradition is certain things. There's certain things traditional in a relationship. I think if we kind of got closer to, we could have better relationships. Accountability is one. That's a big part of a traditional relationship. It just is what it is. And a gentleman at work the other night started talking to me. I don't know this cat from Hole in the Wall. And I'm sitting in my truck, and this car rolls up next to me. And, you know, he's pulling kind of slow, and I'm like, okay. And I wind the window down, and he started just going on, just going. 70 years old and been married 50-some-odd years. So he was telling me, as he said that, he said other guys in the job tease him. He said, man, you don't get tired of having sex with the same woman over and over. And he says, he said, you know what? He said, everything that's going on out here, I'm glad I got one woman I could be with. And I know when I'm with her, you don't have to worry about X, Y, Z. And he said, I'm going to tell you, it doesn't mean that there hasn't been times in the life or there's not days when, you know, she may want to basically run me over and then come back and run me over again. Or he said, are not days when I'm around her, I may want to do certain things to her. But he said, I can always account on she's going to be a certain way, and when I need her, there it is. I'm like, damn, there it is. And that's accountable. You know, that she knows what she can trust and that he's going to be there for her. He knows what vice versa was going to be, that accountability. And they've been at this for over 50-some-odd years. Damn. And maybe the mere fact, too, I'm just going to kind of maybe add to what he was saying about he hasn't stepped out or he doesn't think about stepping on her, because if she's basically what he needs, why is he allowing himself to be with someone else? Why is he basically moving beyond that? Because she offers up everything that he needs. So he'd be foolish to place himself with someone else and be with someone else. And this cat went on talking about everything. He just kept, and then I'm like, you know, myself, after 5-10 minutes, I'm like, that's either, you know, that's good, man. Let go. But he stayed there and he just kept going on and on. And then sometimes you have conversations with people and you don't know why they came to talk to you or why you came to talk to them. And there might have been some things he just needed to say. Might have been some things I just needed to hear. As he was talking, I just said, you know what, that's what it can be. Let him go. And the whole conversation was 90% him, 10% me. And he said to me, oh, you're a young man. I'm like, cat, I'm 11 years younger than you. Also, that makes me a younger man. Realistically, I'm 11 years younger than you. And, you know, he just kept going on and on. But I think he needed an ear at the time to talk to. He needed someone just to kind of basically not say much and just kind of let things kind of fall into place. He was telling me how basically he wanted to move years ago to Georgia. And his wife was like, no. Now she wants to go and it's more expensive. They eventually will, but these are the things that, and I, you know, when I'm listening to him, I'm saying, well, he doesn't know me. Why is he giving me? But again, sometimes as men, speak on the men term, we need to just basically have someone that we can unload to and realize once we unload, that's not going any further. And part of him talking to me and some saying some of the things, he said, I cannot hurt him with it, none of that information. I can't take it to anyone that's going to basically make him go, damn, what did I say? I know no one in his circle. I don't know his wife, know anyone. And it kind of brought me back to what we do here in a sense, because we allow ourselves to open up and say some things. And I say basically, you know, we don't shy away from saying things. That to me, it's just more than a line, because it's important for, and part of the reason why I wanted to do this in the beginning, to have a place where men can basically open up, share, and not think of the repercussions, not think of what's going to come behind, who's going to look at me. Don't give a fuck about that. Just talk, just basically talk. And that goes back to that word again, talk. Just basically open and talk, because a lot of times, men, you know, we're filtering, which I don't think we should be doing. We filter what comes out of our mouth. You know, if I'm going to say this right, am I going to say this in person, feel a certain way? No. When a man talks, he should just be able to talk. If you can't get it, you don't respect it, then it's not him, it's you. And I respect any man that can open up and share. It's not afraid to have dialogue and say, hey, man, if he's hurting, this is what I'm feeling. You know, it doesn't mean he's not strong. It's what I'm feeling. And I said earlier about how they look at us as being a wallet, in a sense. They don't look at us as having feelings. They don't even look at us as having blood running through our veins. And it's so interesting. Another video I saw was this lady talking about side chicks. And she herself was a side chick. And she came out and said that women need to realize what men with side chicks ain't all about the pussy. You know, stop thinking your pussy is enough, but it's more to men leaving or going to them as side chicks. It may not start just basically on sex. And she said, when the last time you really checked on how he's doing, really looked up under and made sure how he was doing, his mentality, how he's feeling, how things are going along with him. And she said, what side chick, that's part of the attraction. When he starts out with her, guess what? She listens. She pays attention to him. And for a man, that's intoxicating. It just is. Because if you're with a mate that basically, here again, just sees you as a wallet, doesn't see you as a human being, doesn't see you as a person have thoughts, feelings, care, concerns, you know, sex is a whole different story, but sex comes into it. But somehow, sometimes that's how it gets started. Because the person that you're with, you're looking at them as a wallet, not as a human being. Because you make it all about you. Only your feelings should be concerned about your thoughts, you know, your day, this and that. When he's totally, he has those things too. And if he feels within you, he can open up and release those things to you, then he would. But when he feels like he can't, he's not given an opportunity to. And another woman basically steps in to fill that role, and sex gets started, then you go. There it is. And I'm not advocating side chicks, whatever. All I'm just saying, I'm saying on both sides, men and women. If you choose to be in a relationship, you choose to be in a marriage, you should do what's necessary to make sure that person is okay. Understand that person. Understand the person that you're with. How can someone outside of you render services and thoughts and personality of a person that you claim that you love better than what you're doing? And if you can't do it at a time, learn to do it and do it better. And then until then there's no need to go outside. And if that person going outside of you, then that's not the person you need to be with. But it's interesting how in either situation, when they step you out, you're blaming her. Quickly blame her. But why don't you really find out what's going on with him? What has lured him out there? What made him go out there? Seriously, is it something I've done? I'm not saying they automatically blame yourself, but why not take a second and analyze? Are there some things I could have done better? Some things I could have brought to the table and done a little differently? But you're quick to look at her. She's always going to be out there. If any of her, it's going to be another woman. But again, like the 70-year-old said in so many words, if things are what they should be and they're being taken care of, he's not going to feel good about going out there. She's not going to feel good about going out there. So you decide to be in a relationship. Maybe you should put away the games. Maybe you should put that away. Maybe you should open up and learn how to do it correctly. Or even learn how to do it better. And maybe you'll have what you want long term. Maybe you won't be running around telling you, but you want a husband, you want this and that. Take some time, look at yourself, understand what the flaws are. Yeah, that may hurt, but we all have them, and we all can do better. Now and I always go to the gentlemen and find out what's been percolating on their mind. As you see, if you give me opportunity, I can go for a long period of time. And I guess at some point I have to wheel myself back in. Maybe not. But as I will myself back in, Mr. DeMaurice, your question, sir.
All right, my question is, there's been a guy who comes in front of you and he's been emasculated by his woman. She has stripped him of his manhood. She has embarrassed him. She has given him all the signs that she really doesn't care about him, but he's been trying to stick with her, and he's got to the point where he is he's at his wit's end. He's at the bottom. What advice do you give him?
Ooh. It's difficult as this may sound, you got to be careful. You got to be careful, because if you come strong at him, kind of really needs to hear, you push him back to her, in a sense. But I think in a case like that, you have to tell him, or I would say to him, bro, you got to find your peace. You really need to find your peace. And if that's not your peace, what's not peaceful for you, you have to let go. And that's like with anything in life. If it's not bringing you peace, it's bringing you hurt, it's bringing you harm, it's affecting your well-being. It's like eating food you know that's not good for you. You know, you can have it sometimes, but you have to have it in moderation. You can't just bend out on something that you know it's not good for you. So why are you bending out on her when now you know it's not good for you? It's a tough decision. But at the end of the day, you must basically take steps to better you, to enhance your well-being, to enhance your peace of mind. And sometimes situations like that, when with a guy, he has felt like he's put so much into it, he wants to see it turn around. And he's waiting for the boat to turn around. But what happens is, in the process of waiting, that boat keeps turning in the opposite direction. So now you got further to turn around. Further, you got way more way to come back, if it's ever going to come back. And in the process of your waiting, more damage is being done. So at some point, you may just want to get off the ride. But I would always kind of find a tactful way, because if you kind of come strong, they may hear you for the moment, then they kind of resort back to, well, their primal feelings that they have for her. So it's kind of sad when you come across, not kind, it's very sad, you come across a brother that's been with a woman that he has allowed her to basically do that. And, you know, you feel sorry for him, but I wouldn't let that be displayed to him. But, yeah, kind of say to him, yeah, you have to find your peace, bro. And it seems like you haven't been at peace in a long time. What is it going to take for you to find peace? What do you need to do? I could tell you X, Y, Z and give you a roadmap, but are you willing to walk that roadmap? So you have to determine what is going to give you peace, what's going to bring you joy. And at the same time, ask God to channel your steps. You know, don't make that move without him. Put him first and realize, you know, and he will show you. But, you know, that's where you're going. Your response, Mr. Charles.
No, I think you're spot on. I thought about what you were saying. I think part of it too is, I think you're absolutely right that the approach is key. I mean, you can't just come out and just blurt something out, and because you never know how fragile a person is. So therefore, you have to tread lightly. Because some people, when you spend a lot of, you know, if a man's married to a woman or connected with a woman for a long time, and then all of a sudden it unravels because whatever she's doing or whatever's happening, it's a messed up situation, then you have to find a way to reach him in his vulnerable state. And to build off what you said, I think part of it is saying he has to protect himself and repair himself. Because oftentimes I think in those scenarios, a man might, if something goes off the rail or something, a man might want to try to fix it or try to see what he can do to fix the situation with the woman or fix her. And sometimes it's not fixable. So therefore, you have to point out to him that this is something you perhaps can't change.
a person has to want to change themselves. And if they don't want to, you got to see it for what it is. So if that's the case, what you have to do is help yourself. So that means let's stop the hurt right now. And oftentimes that means protecting your heart, shutting it down, covering yourself, diving into your faith, and build yourself up as a man. Get that whatever you lost. You meant about being torn down as a man. Build that masculinity up. Become stronger in the man that you were from the beginning, hopefully you were, and get back to a sense where you're strong enough to deal with the situation. Then you can move forward with making a decision. Are you going to stay with her? You know, move on, whatever. But at first, I think we got to build that individual up, because oftentimes they're hurting real bad, and they're just kind of all over the place and really don't know how to get a hold of themselves. And I think you're absolutely right. You got to protect yourself, and oftentimes it means protect your heart and being strong before you can move back into that situation or move forward.
Your response, Mr. DeMaurice? Good question, too, boys. Very good question.
Yeah, thank you. I would advise him to, and he's probably coming to you because he senses that you're a real man. You got to be around a real man to help guide you and to help you realize that a good woman doesn't break you down and take you from the essence of being a man. A good woman enhances that. And I don't care how long that she's been a part of your life. If she's not enhancing that over the years, then you gotta get the strength to walk away, because you're not going to be your true self ever trying to make somebody happy or please somebody that's never going to be pleased by you, no matter what you do. And helping that man realize that, you know, the way you're feeling now, has that woman stepped to you and tried to help you heal? Or is she making you feel worse? And how do you want to live the rest of your life? As a simp, as an emasculated man that's never going to reach his full potential as a man, or continue to kowtow to a toxic woman? And I think that the key is to find that male, that real male that's going to help guide you through that. You need a mentor sometimes. Excuse me. You need a man to help you guide yourself into manhood. And that's what I look at a lot of emasculated men. They never had a man that really guided them to say, this is what a man is. This is what a man does. This is how you choose the right mate to fortify that. And I try to set them up in that particular situation. Because once you get to that point, there's a long journey to get back to your true self after you've been torn down like that.
Interesting enough, man, a man sometimes is first emasculated by his mother, bro. And she sets the tone for other women to come in and basically follow that tone. And a lot of times, cats are thinking they're doing right by because their mother is basically, they don't even see it because, you know, they love, of course. And I say this from time to time. Sometimes the people that hurt you the most and do the most damage to you are the people that are supposed to love you and care for you. And I know that's a tough pill to swallow, but the mom may not have seen it that she was emasculating him. She may have seen it that she was just trying to have him be the man that she wanted to have in her life. And then in essence, she set him up to go out there to be that to other women. And he's not realizing where it comes from. And if you kind of take him back to that path, it might be hard for him to stand it, because there's no way for the love that he has and the care he has for his mother, he would think that his mother has basically set him up to be on this road. But in a lot of cases, that is how the emasculation man really starts. And we kind of look at the woman as doing it. No, she's picked up on what he has been, and she basically goes about fulfilling what she needs and continuing on. And it's interesting because I remember when I got separated, and I got divorced years ago. I can't count the number, bro. And I didn't go around telling people I'm getting divorced, none of that. Just went on separating. I didn't. That was nothing. I'm never one with my business out there like that. But they must have heard, because I can't tell you how many cats came up to me wanting my advice on their situations. Married men, what should I do? Standing back, and I'm like, okay. Did someone put a banner out somewhere? Talk to Mark? Because it was just popping up. None of it's enlisted. None. And it was funny, sad, and at the same time. And my thing was, you can't look at what I've done to be a roadmap for you. You have to evaluate your own personal situation and determine what you need to do. So I can hear you and say some things, but advice of telling you what you need to get out, I would never tell a man or woman you need a divorce or whatever the case may be. That's a decision you have to make on your own. Because once you make that decision, you got to be able to stand on it. You can't waffle. You got to have, that's something you have to feel. Because I knew when I made the decision for me, there was no turning back. I'm not looking back. My head ain't swiveling. There's nothing. Mm-mm. It's done. And I didn't have to go to anyone and say, hey, this is one of the It all came from what's in me. I knew. So when that decision was made, there was no waffling. There was no There was nothing to think about. Let's get the paperwork signed. Yeah, all we got to do now is put the ink, move the ink. But it's just amazing how at that time where they would come, they just, I don't know why, I can't say, you know, maybe something they heard, whatever, but they just, they came and there's like, they just came out of the woodwork. Mr. Charles, your question, sir.
Yeah, see how I can phrase this. Me and Maurice and I talked about this before, but I can say men in general, but I can even specifically ask a question about our men. What do you think the percentage is, or how reasonable, or I'm going to say reasonable, the percentages of men, our men, in their lifetime, particularly as they get older and issues and stuff going on, have actually considered committing suicide?
Wow. I think it's high, bro. I think none of us is probably have never not had that thought for a second or two when you get to a low moment because you feel, you know, there's more stuff that's coming at you. How am I going to kind of, you know, play this and whatever? And I think for those that have not taken that road, realize that it's going to be better tomorrow, that God's never going to give you more than what you can bear. You understand that it's going to get better and realize this will strengthen me somehow. But for those that didn't have that singular thought process or thought process similar to that and just couldn't see no way around it, they just kind of basically said, you know what, I had enough. And they wanted the pain to just stop. There was a young guy that I worked with years ago. Guy just got hired not too long after he got hired, a year or so. And he was having some stuff going on with the woman that he lived with. She was threatening to take his kids, whatever the case may be. The guy went on one day and blew his brains out, bro. Blew his brains out. And we're at work thinking, you know, what about that situation? And I guess for him, just I'm thinking outside that he was thinking he's going to lose his child, blah, 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 blah. How can he live without? And those moments, those thoughts will come because we don't control what can kind of come into our mental mindset, what we're thinking. But if you have a foundation, I firmly believe in knowing that what's here now will be better tomorrow. The sun will come out tomorrow, regardless of how bleak it looks. And you have that self-preservation that God gives to you. And knowing that, yeah, he's there for you, and he's going to pull you through, that doesn't mean he's not going to allow you to feel an experience. It pulls you out of that moment real quickly. It takes you away from it. But when you're not sure of his love over you, and you're kind of weak and you don't even, or has it been instilled inside of you, what's going on around you can overtake you and maybe feel like, okay, I'm better off not being here. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, I think it's a high number. It's probably over 50%, especially if you're black, because you look at society, how they treat you, how, you know, that you're the scourge of the earth, that you're not worth anything, and that, you know, folks are trying to hurry up and get you off this earth by all their actions. You know, as a black man, I can't see how it hasn't crossed your mind, you know, from time to time or some particular time in your life when you get to a low point. And it's not the regular way that, you know, folks think of suicide. You take pills, you know, you do other things. It's our risky behavior that, you know, we don't care. We're just going to live for the day, and whatever happens tomorrow is tomorrow. That, I think, could be considered suicidal behavior. I'm not caring, not planning. But I think in times like, cause I know me and Mr. Charles talked about it, you know, you start thinking about your ancestors. You start thinking about people who came before you and how they came through tougher times. And it's like, you know, if I had that DNA in me, that, you know, if they can endure and move on and keep going, then, you know, that I'm going to be all right no matter what. And so some people, they think about it that way, and others don't, and they succumb to, you know, all the things that will get them to the point where they decide that they're going to check out. But I know when I've gotten to those low points in my life, I always think about, you know, sacrifice of my mom, my dad, my grandparents, the ancestors who, you know, gone through, you know, 100 times worse than I've gone through. But they made the sacrifices to make sure I got here. And so I would be letting them down if I ever even entertained that thought of checking out earlier than I was supposed to. So, yeah, I think we all, it kind of crossed our minds, especially in certain situations that we've been in where we just saw no hope. But, you know, our faith and something in that DNA that's just recorded information that's been passed down from generation to generation and generation, and their lives pumped through us. And if we realize that in our DNA, their lives, they aren't gone. Our ancestors are still with us. In that DNA, then you can endure no matter what is in front of you.
Super good response. I want to say something real quick, Mr. Charles, if I go come back to you, man. And I, you know, some people say, why you say this? But we must watch as a race of people what we adopt, what other races do. Because Mr. Charles, I mean, Mr. Meester spoke about our ancestors. Those folks could have killed themselves while facing what they were facing, and they chose not to, and they persevere. But when I remember when I came up as a child, you did not hear of black people basically killing themselves. It was like, you know, I remember I said this about Tina Turner. I remember Geraldo, he was on a Geraldo show one day, and he said, you know, Tina Turner tried, he said, black people don't kill themselves, Geraldo. I said, what do you mean? He said, don't. He said, you know, we don't do that. He said, that's not who we are as people. He said, you know, a black person, he said, literally, he said, a black person go to the basement window and jump out the basement window and try to say they're trying to kill themselves. They may try to get attention, but they're not trying to kill themselves. So my point in saying that is that I think over the years, we have watched the world, black people have watched the world, and we adopted things that they do and feel like it's okay, and it's not. And we got to be very careful. Because there's things about us that are exclusively ours, us, and honor that. Because if you brought us through slavery, you brought us through what we have experienced throughout the time, there's something about us that makes us so fucking resilient that we can't allow that. We just can't. We just can't. So your response is, Mr. Jones, it's a very awesome question.
I think the rate is high. I really do. I think because of the fact that oftentimes I don't think our families, even our women, understand the pressures that we go through, man, in life, particularly if you have a family and you're a breadwinner and you're working your butt off and certain groups or your family's accustomed to certain things. And you know, financial pressures come down where you may not be making the money you were making before. And, you know, people get used to living a certain lifestyle. And if you can't provide that anymore, along with even a divorce or whatever situation may be, a lot of us carry a lot of secrets, man. You know, we now it's kind of common knowledge. We're a little bit more open when people talk about being, you know, abused as children, molested, whatever. But there are a lot of people holding on to secrets like that, man. And it's affecting their lives and how they go about their business and trying to wear that facade of a mask. And it's hard. It's hard, man. It's tough. It's tough trying to be strong. So I think that for myself, I always think about, I try to pay more attention now to people that are in my circle, even just friends, man, because not really looking for signs, but just being open to listen, because you never know. That person might be on the edge of something. You go, man, that was devastating. And they open to you, open up to you, you go, man, maybe I was a force in helping them just to make it through the day. So I think that's part of something we should do as men, continuing to pay attention to one another. And even if you have to come out and say anything crazy, but just offer to listen. Because I think that's kind of missing a lot. I mean, you do a great job here, and that's the thing that's awesome, and maybe it's helping some other people, too, that listen. But I think that's major. But I think Dean Reese hit it on his head about the ancestors. Because he had asked me before, and he read part of my book, he was asking me about a situation where basically I had lost everything in my life, the two most important people in my life. And he asked me to have him contemplate, you know, checking out. And I thought about it real hard before I answered. And then initially I said no. And he kind of asked me why. And then I alluded to the fact that the first thing that came to my mind was my dad. And my dad staying in my life when he didn't have to. Excuse me, when I was real young. Secondly, the thing that really drove home why, as you said, having that resilience as a for our people and our ancestors was my mother. And what my mother had to go through to give me birth. My mother had one lung because of tuberculosis when she had me. They said, you cannot have a kid. It's too risky. You can die. And the fact that she fought them and begged them, she was willing to take a risk with one lung. How the hell can I check out, man? I'm living my mama's dream. I'm a resource. I'm a vessel of my mother, so everybody knows that she's still alive and that her spirit is alive. Her seed is alive, and I represent her every day of morning first. And that's kind of deep for some people. I'm not mad at those that may not understand it, but that's my ongoing push in life and has been, and until I take my last breath. We're all different, but I think that's why we need to check on one another, because you just never know.
That is so true, bro. There's so many secrets that hasn't been told. There's so many people living with different things and kind of burdened by a lot of different things. And they just carry it. And you bring your burdens to them. I know it's easier said than done, but I would avoid anyone that's carrying burdens. Give those burdens to God. Just give them to him. He'll lift them. He has a way of lifting them and making you feel better about them. And nothing can go back and change the past and erase it. But just relieving your burdens and leaving your burdens with him can basically help you walk clearer today and tomorrow. I have a question I want to throw to you two gentlemen, because it comes from a business you, Mr. Charles, and you said about making less money and stuff of that nature, and people learn to live a certain lifestyle. And I'm going to come back to you with Mr. Charles, because I think as men we need to talk about this. We don't have much more time on this show, but do you feel a sense of responsibility to treat her a certain way financially?
Wow. If I have it and I have it to give, then my answer would be yes. But I think you have to be realistic. I mean, if you go above your means, you simply can't do it because you only have a certain amount of money that you bring in. It is what it is. It may not be understandable to some, but I think I would share what I have and wouldn't have a big deal with it, but it depends on what I was bringing in. Because you'd be trying to kill yourself, trying to live to a certain standard that it's almost impossible to reach.
Okay. Real quick, before I come to you, Mr. DeMaurice, with the same response, I only feel that obligation to my kids. I really do. And I've always felt that. I had a child early on, man. I think I was 16 when my daughter was born. And I only, from that, maybe I'd learned that from back then, but just because you're with me as a woman doesn't mean I'm obligated to give you a lifestyle of anything. It doesn't. Now, we can enjoy some stuff together, and I could be partly doing that, but there's no obligation because you open your legs up to me, you choose to be in company with me, that I owe you something. I just don't. I've never felt that. And I'm amazed when guys run around and buy these lavish stuff for women, or whatever the case may be. Hell, if she can't afford it, then she doesn't need it. I'm being honest with you. And I'm not saying we should not give gifts. A gift is not an obligation. Your response to the question, Mr. DeGrasse.
I saw Mike Tyson and LL Cool J talk about this recently, and how LL was saying, if you're trying to buy love, if you're trying to, you know, give all these expensive gifts and stuff, you're going to lose. You're just going to lose. And think about, you know, just what happened recently with, we talked about an emasculated male, him trying to buy this woman's love, man. He's doing all this stuff, and she's still pining over a ghost. You can't buy love, man. You can't buy love, and don't feel obligated to. If the person can't accept you for you, you don't need them. You can't afford it. You can't afford trying to buy somebody's love, man. You just can't. And so I think I know I learned that lesson very early on. Like, nah, you know, I'll give gifts every now and then if I can afford it, but I'm not going to, you know, outside my means to make you happy. Because if I got to do that, then you're never going to be happy. You're never going to, no matter how much money. I don't care how much money a man make, a woman still cheat on you. She'll still cheat on you. No matter how much money, how famous you are, she can still cheat on you. So it ain't the money. It ain't the fame. It's something else. It's something else that they need. So if you're trying to buy somebody's love, feel obligated that you got to, you know, take care of them because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they can take care of themselves. So if you feel obligated, get out of that space. Get out of that space immediately. You're never going to win.
I love you too, man. I swear I do, man. I love you too because we're not afraid, bro. We're not afraid. We come out and say some things need to be said. And believe it or not, we're saying some things that men are a bit dealing with and may not take it outside of their own space, their own square to even bring it to anyone else. And I love the fact that we can, as men, talk about it, be about it, and be honest about it. That puts the wrap on what we did this time. We get together in about a week. We'll do it all over again. Thank you, too, for, you know, on a Sunday morning, finding yourself here. You could be doing any other thing and other things, whatever the case may be. But you find yourself here to give what you give and what you two guys give, I can never pay enough for. Never pay enough for. I love you both, man. Let's have a good week. We'll talk later.
Every night I say my prayers and wish you well.